Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, a full day today. We start with the good martini, and it's certainly not good for Mrs. Clinton, which means it's good for conservatives. This train wreck of a press conference yesterday, trying to remove questions or doubts about her conduct with this private email server and whether or not she wiped the hard drive clean. Ed Henry of Fox News, who is covering her campaign, is the one who grilled her with the questions. This comes in two different sections. First of all, Clinton's defense overall of her actions as it relates to the setup of this private email system and her handling of classified material, but then rebutted by Clinton expert Ron Fornia of the National Journal earlier today on Morning Joe.
No matter what anybody tries to say, the facts are stubborn. What I did was legally permitted. Number one, first and foremost, okay? I did not send classified material, and I did not receive any material that was marked or designated classified, which is the way you know whether something is.
And if you're saying something that you know is untrue, that's a lie. And I think by this time she's got to know, for example, that it was against federal policy to have a server off the books and all of our emails on that server. She must know by now that it doesn't matter whether or not these documents were marked classified or not. There's been people prosecuted for mishandling classified documents that were not marked classified.
And the most pathetic sequence of all is when Ed Henry persisted with his question, because she kept dodging it, about whether she wiped her server.
All I can tell you is, in retrospect, if I'd used a government account and I had said, you know, let's release everything, let's let everybody in America see what I did for 4 years, we would have the same arguments. Right. So that's all I could say. I have no idea. That's why we turned it over.
You were in charge of it. You were the official in charge. Did you wipe the server?
What, like with a cloth or something?
I don't know.
Well,
you know how it works digitally. Did you try to wipe the whole thing?
I don't know how it works digitally at all.
Jim, this is the second major press conference she's had on this. I hope she has a whole lot more, because every time she does it, it gets a whole lot worse.
Greg, I want the public to understand that I understand nothing about computers. I barely can use them. Fax machines confuse me. And the entire concept of cyber, the very words cybersecurity, confuse me. And I don't understand them. That's why I should be your next president. there's so many ways to go here. But first is, if you're going to have a press conference denying that you did criminal activity, don't wear a pantsuit that's all orange and looks like a prison jumpsuit. Secondly, don't shrug like, you know, oh, I have no idea what's going on. Three, like they used to say during the Nixon administration, that position is no longer operative. She can't say, oh, I didn't know there was any classified information on there. The only way to say I had no idea there was classified information in all these emails that I got is for her to be really, really stupid. I didn't know all this satellite information came from the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. I didn't know this information about drones and Al-Qaeda and terror groups and all that. I had no idea all that stuff was classified. Come on. Come on. She's really backed herself into a corner here where only one of two things can happen. She can admit that she lied, and if so, that's very bad. She said, I never did anything improper, I never did anything wrong. I never sent or was received any classified information. Totally, all that's totally false. So you got to say no. One answer is I lied. But at that point, you've now lied about really important things and emphatically insisted things and all that stuff. The second one is just for this, what she's going to go with is I'm stupid. I had no idea. I never understood any of this stuff. And again, I don't think that helps. And as I wrote in the Morning Journal today, I think what she really runs – where it really turns into a problem, why so many Democrats are just going to insist, oh, the FBI is being partisan and they're all part of the vast right wing. Because once you acknowledge Hillary Clinton did something astonishingly stupid, that in order to hide from FOIA requests and congressional subpoenas, she exposed herself in the emails of everybody she emailed with, president, the rest of the administration, everybody else, to Chinese intelligence, to Russian intelligence, to anybody who could hack into her system. That's stupid. She has terrible judgment. And it's very hard to run for president when it's pretty, you know, glaringly obvious that your judgment is awful and you risk national security out of a very short-term personal self-interest.
clearly. And just two takeaways here. First of all, her comment that if she had done all her email on a government server and had turned everything over, that we'd be having the same conversation. How in the world is that true? And secondly, you know it's a really bad press conference when the revelation that her server was kept in a bathroom closet, this mom-and-pop operation in the middle of New York City, is not even the lead story in terms of the email server today.
Yeah, and also, like, just that last year, you play the audio of that joke, you know, oh, well, you know, wipe with a cloth, you mean? The Snapchat joke where, oh, the messages just, you know, erase themselves. This isn't really something she can joke her way out of. There's something awkward and forced and nervous about the jokes. Did you wipe the servers? What? You be like, really? She really was confused and thought you meant with a cloth? Really? She's kind of going from her husband's playbook, and it just doesn't work for her.
On to the bad martini now, and the seventh video is now out from the Center for Medical Progress, and this is the third one, I believe, in a row that features the testimony of Holly O'Donnell, who's a former procurement technician for STEM Express. That's the company that had done a lot of work with Planned Parenthood in terms of receiving fetal body parts, and they recently cut ties with Planned Parenthood as a result of all this. But Ms. O'Donnell, in this latest video, talks about getting word of a fully intact baby, as it turns out, since the heart is still beating here, and she explains what then happened with the technician at Planned Parenthood.
This is the most gestated fetus and closest thing to a baby I've seen. And she's like, okay, I want to show you something. So she has one of her instruments, and she just taps the heart, and it starts beating. And I'm sitting here, and I'm looking at this fetus, and its heart is beating. And I don't know what to think. It had a face. It wasn't completely torn up. And its nose was very pronounced. It had eyelids. And its mouth was pronounced. And then, since the fetus was so intact, she said, okay, well, this is a really good fetus, and it looks like we can procure a lot from it. We're going to procure a brain. So it's like, okay, so what you do is you go through the face. I'm thinking, no, I don't want to do this. And she takes the scissors, and she makes a small incision right here.
And then she handed Holly O'Donnell the tools to cut through the face and procured the brain as well. Jim, it's hard to listen to. It's even harder to watch because there is some video spliced in there of a baby moving on the Petri dish. And we're talking murder at this point.
Yeah, it's bad. Each time you're like, oh, my God, that's the most shocking video I've ever seen. No, they're worse. And we've got several more to go. And everyone's just kind of marveling at what the following videos could include. One, it observes the Born Alive Protection Act really doesn't mean anything if nobody enforces it. And that's what we have here. And we basically have, or you know, harvesting organs from children that are viable outside the womb. They're there. There's a video of it moving on that video. I guess I should use the term it. I should use he. It's a boy. Yeah. So it's really horrible. It's one of those days where our bad martini is just about almost too horrible to talk about, Greg.
Yeah. There's not much more to say. So let's move on to the crazy martini, and back to Hillary Clinton. As you may have heard yesterday, she had an encounter with the group Black Lives Matter. They did her the courtesy of not interrupting her event in New Hampshire. This was last week, but they did meet with her backstage, and they had a fairly lengthy conversation. Essentially, the question from Black Lives Matter was, you know, what are you going to admit to that you and your husband did wrong in terms of longer incarceration sentences and all sorts of other things that have, in their opinion, negatively impacted the black community? And she gave a long meandering answer about how everybody's got to pull together and do better on these issues. And so then there are these two clips from later on towards the end of the interview where the Black Lives Matter didn't really like her initial answer, and Hillary Clinton fires back.
This is and has always been a white problem of violence. It's not, there's not much that we can do to stop the violence against us.
Well, if that is
a conversation that pushed back.
Okay, I understand. I understand what you're saying.
Also respectfully.
Yeah. Well, respectfully, if that is your position, then I will talk only to white people about how we are going to deal with the very real
problems. That's not what I mean. That's not what I mean. No. But like what I'm saying is, you what you just said was a form of victim blaming.
And then when it came to what Black Lives Matter is hoping to achieve, Hillary went in a direction that's even further to the left than them.
What the Black Lives Matter movement needs to do to change white hearts is
No, I don't talk about. Look, I don't believe you change hearts. I believe you change laws, you change allocation of resources, you change the way systems operate.
Jim, where do you start with that one?
There's been talk about whether Hillary Clinton just isn't the politician her husband is, that she's just not that good on the stump, not good at retail, not good at personal communications. I mean, could you imagine any scenario in which you say, well, look, if that's your attitude, I'm only going to talk to white people? You understand the point she was trying to get at. I'm echoing my colleague Charlie Cook here, that you almost come away feeling kind of sympathetic to Hillary Clinton in that she's dealing with someone who is just completely wrapped up in a sense of victimhood.
Yes.
And who really is almost looking for a reason to be offended at her response, and much almost to his quiet irritation, she keeps agreeing with him. He's looking for a reason to be offended by the exchange, to be, you've disrespect, you're blaming the victim. You can see how quickly he wants to say you're blaming the victim here. In his narrative, African Americans are only victims, right? And these are only problems that are thrust upon them. There's nothing that they can do within their own to prevent violence within their own communities and things like that. It's very much an all or nothing viewpoint. The irony is that she largely agrees with that, although she says, look, if you do that, then I can't talk to this community if they have nothing to do with the problems within their own community. The second thing is that you can tell where she's going to her talking points of, I believe in changing systems and which is, kind of rote. And you can tell this was not a clear emotional connection between the two. Ultimately, the Black Lives Matter movement has a very simple perspective on what the problem in America in the year 2015 is. It is white supremacy, that we are a white supremacist society, that even though we have African-American president, African-American attorney general, African-Americans have reached some of the highest posts in the land, dominant cultural figures, CEOs, all that stuff. No, that there's still that the American culture is permeated down to the pores with white supremacy. I think most white Americans look at this and say, nonsense. That not only is that a simplistic and just flat out inaccurate explanation of what's wrong in America today, there are probably a lot of white Americans like, wait a minute, what do you mean I'm supreme? what do you mean I call the shots and I rule the world and all that stuff? There are lots of white Americans who don't feel that. And then secondly, it kind of says, well, everything that goes wrong, we saw, riots in Baltimore, what's the problem with that? All the problems of African-American inner cities are forced upon them from the outside, or are some sort of unjust structural issue put forth by white America, and there's no responsibility for African-Americans for their own conditions in there. And I think that's a bridge too far even for Hillary Clinton. I think most Democrats realize that is not a philosophy that they're going to win 270 electoral votes of that. If they actually ran on that, they already lose the white vote significantly and make up for it by having a really big African-American turnout. They would get slaughtered in the white vote and they would end up losing the presidency. This is still a country that's 70 to 80% white. There's a whole lot there that this activist doesn't want to hear. Hillary Clinton is trying to figure out how to not say any of that and to win this guy over without saying something that's going to sound – they're going to make her extremely difficult to explain come general election time. She stumbles her way through it. I almost feel a few molecules of sympathy here for her. But on the other hand, at some point when somebody's saying something that's just flat out inaccurate or ridiculous, you got to come out and say what you think of it.
Very quickly before we go, first of all, Jim will be out the next 2 days headed to a – conference in Ohio. But Jim, this story's been percolating for a few days now, and we just haven't found the right martini to put it in there. So we're going to end on what I think is a positive note from both of our perspectives. Football season's about to start. Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker James Harrison igniting a controversy when he returned the participation trophies for his two young boys. He said, "I came home to find that my boys received two trophies for nothing. Participation trophies. Well, I'm very proud of my boys for everything they do and will encourage them till the day I die. These trophies will be given back until they earn a real trophy. I'm sorry, I'm not sorry for believing that everything in life should be earned, and I'm not about to raise two boys to be men by making them believe they are entitled to something just because they tried their best, because sometimes your best is not enough, and that should drive you to want to do better, not cry and whine until somebody gives you something to shut you up and keep you happy." So a lot of the touchy-feely people think this is horrible, especially because the kids were young. But as someone who has railed here about the everybody wins or it's someone else's turn to win on the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse that I keep watching, it just drives me crazy. And so good for James Harrison, and hopefully more people will take up his cause here.
God bless you, James Harrison. One man army against the kind of the attitude of relativism. You know, way back when Reggie White, the great for the Philadelphia Eagles and Green Bay Packers, used to be kind of an outspoken Republican. For a while there, Charles Barkley was. You kind of saw professional athletes more likely to lean towards the right. You know, Jack Kemp was a famous example of this. Mm-hmm. People wondered why that was. And people point out that, like, for all of the things that are wrong in the world of sports today, at the end of the day, you know, you go out on the field and you play and you do your best and one team wins, the other team loses. Sports talk radio exists so people can argue, but ultimately, either you scored more points than the team or you didn't. Either you caught the ball or you didn't. Either the ball went through the basket or it didn't. Either you hit the ball or you, you know, out of the park. Effort can be saluted, but ultimately, last year they didn't give the Lombardi trophy to the Patriots and then another slightly smaller trophy to the Seahawks for trying really hard. And the simplicity of sports and the directness and the clarity of it is, I think, something people really enjoy, that it's not interpretive. It's not about, well, this team's tried really hard and they had disadvantages and isn't it unfair? You know, I think it was Bill Parcells said, look, you are what your record is, whether you like it or not. It ultimately doesn't matter whether you lost close, whether you lost, you got routed, you lost. I think that ultimately life's a lot of life is that. A lot. Ultimately, either you get the job done or you don't. And a lot of people aren't comfortable with that. There's been this effort to kind of push against this rule of society. We don't want to have winners and losers. We want everybody to feel good about themselves. And I can have a self-esteem focused society and still have a thriving economy and still celebrate achievement. If every time somebody achieves, you have to turn around and say, well, let's make everybody who didn't achieve not feel so bad. Congratulations to Harrison for standing up against that. Other teams, I hope, will have the actual achievement trophy at the end of the year, but I'll give him a participation trophy for fighting against that this week.
I think we're taking a strong stand here, Jim, considering recent history would suggest that the only thing our teams will likely be in line for this year is a participation trophy.
So. There you go. Exactly. They were there.
We're operating on principle.
They showed up.
Jim, you are off to the Defending the Dream Summit in the Columbus, Ohio area. Have fun there. We'll talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Tune in Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.